6:04 on a Tuesday afternoon, and that was Jason Derulo off the album Future History, It Girl. The afternoon show now very, very joyfully welcomes the return to the airwaves of the Motoring Show with Anton von Alleman. The Motoring Show brought to you proudly by Bolito Car Service Center. Anton, lovely to have you back in the studio, mate.
Dave, excited to be back. It's great.
All we need to do is get you on that microphone and we'll be able to hear you.
There we go. No, it's exciting to be back again, yeah.
And the motoring scene continues to develop at an interesting pace in South Africa. We hear all sorts of things about economic downturns and drama and all that, but car sales continue to happen. The passion that is in the hearts of many South Africans for motoring and all things motoring related continues to drive an interest in the entire subject, which is why it's great to have the Motoring Show back on the air. What's on the agenda today?
Dave, let's talk about fuel. I think fuel versus all the alternative fuels we have available now. So we'll start in the beginning. What we need to get the thing to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see this rather alarming forecasting in the ether about the fact that drama in the Israeli-Palestinian context is, and that whole regional disruption is likely to put massive pressure on the availability of oil going forward, which will drive fuel prices through the roof. And that's not necessarily, well, it's always bad news because it affects the entire economy. But for the ordinary motorist, it's particularly, at this time, the worst news you could imagine. So are there alternatives? How are electric vehicles doing?
Dave, it's a very contentious subject. Electric vehicles overseas is doing well. Obviously, Europe, the States, and the Far East. South Africa, as we sit here right now during load shedding in Bolito, is a problem. And it's not just because of load shedding. It's because of the grid. There's numerous factors involved with electric cars. Of course, the economic pricing of the actual car. I mean, it's up to 80% more than what your normal combustion engine vehicle would cost you. And I think we need to talk about a lot. Is electric cheaper? Because that's the whole point. You know, everyone is saying it's cheaper to fuel your electric car. Is it cheaper? It's not cheaper.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In South Africa, certainly not. You take the amount of electricity that's needed to charge your car. We've got many factors involved. First of all, we're not Europe. Europeans' sort of lifestyles are different. South Africa, everyone goes to work during the day, or certainly 99% of the people, and then charge your vehicles at night. Now, with our grid, if we take the amount of vehicles which Europe has on the roads in the scale of electric versus combustion, if we had to take that figure and implement it now into South Africa, one evening would crash the grid for Eskom. If everyone charged their vehicles.
So that's the reality, huh?
That's the reality. There's a lot more to it. The effects it's going to have on the economy due to the pressures it puts on the grid. It could be you could be affecting yourself and your pocket. The research has been done by up to 180 times. You would be affecting yourself economically through the economic impact of using electric vehicles by that amount on the price of the vehicle that you've just bought. You will actually be affecting yourself negatively through your own personal economy in the long run.
So while it seems like there's been massive advances in the technology and the development of the technology and the storage and the batteries, etc., in reality, for South Africa's situation, possibly it's not going to be a goer for a while.
Economically, it's impossible to work. Financially as well, like I say, you buy the cars, they are excessively priced because at the moment it's not a popular vehicle. So it's like everything. The more they are, the cheaper they are. Your second-hand pricing on those cars crashes drastically, much worse than any other vehicle on the road. I mean, you'd literally be stuck with a car. You're lucky if you can get 30% of the value of the vehicle in a year and what you paid for it.
What?
Yeah. So it's not a very popular move in South Africa at the moment.
And but there are dealers that are telling you a different story. And clearly there's an alternative motive for that. They want to sell them.
Exactly. Exactly. Unfortunately, if you sit and look at the facts, it's just unless you really want the thing and you're prepared to pay for it, yeah. But it's just not a viable option at the moment in South Africa.
Okay.
Certainly for a long time to come.
But one hears stories about manufacturers phasing out internal combustion. Is that still...
Europe, they're going to be banned by 2035. Certainly not going to happen in this country. We will still be the last of the manufacturers of the combustion engine for export.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
So it's actually, relatively speaking, quite good news.
What's going to happen is obviously in your main factories in the European markets and you know, first world countries, they're going to stop making them. But nothing's stopping South Africa making them and selling them there. So it will work for us in the long run to still produce internal combustion engines.
So it's not all bad news. There is always a silver lining. Talking about manufacturing, I was rather alarmed to see in the news the other day that, is it in Rosslyn in Pretoria, that the Nissan plant where they were producing the NP200 Bucky, the little tiny one, they're no longer going to be producing that. They had plans for an alternative. The plans fell through. They're concerned that that whole manufacturing line and all the jobs, I think it's something like 400 jobs, they're going to lose.
It's not just that. It's a very popular selling vehicle. It's one of the most popular small buckies, if we can call them that, in South Africa. It's certainly a big portion of the market. And it's just gone, disappeared. So, you cannot buy a new one anymore. They just don't make them. So, yeah, unfortunately, corporate, there's other reasons to... Look, the bottom line is, you were talking about earlier, the conflict and things. A big portion of that vehicle was sourced from Russia, and that's the reason.
Oh,
yeah, that's the reason why they're coming from factories in Russia. Not necessarily the car, but certainly the parts,
components
for the car, and that's the reason why they actually pulled the plug on the vehicle. So that actually affected that. I see Fiat have, from the Stellantis group, Fiat have just announced that they will be backing a alternative, but obviously not going to be the same, and it's going to take a while for South Africa to even take Fiat on the numbers that they had on the MP300. The MP200. So, yeah, it is a shame. It's a very popular vehicle, but yeah, there's a massive gap in the market there in that sector, and I can't believe none of the manufacturers actually jumped on it.
Well, watch this space, as they say in the classics. In the meantime, what is selling? What are the marks that are still doing well?
Believe it. Well, the most growth we've had in any form of vehicles is in trucks in South Africa. Yeah.
Oh, well, with Transnet doing their damnedest
to curtail
any rail activity, that would stand to reason. But but it's not good news for the roads.
It's not good news for us motorists. No, the more trucks on the road, the more frustrating for us. But yeah, that's the quickest growing sector in the transport road sector. The market has crashed. Well, not crashed, but it's stalled. It's down 8% from last year. And, of course, we're supposed to still have growth. So it's actually it's stalled and it's slightly going backwards.
Are you talking about the
new car market as a whole?
And used cars as a result of that?
Used cars as a result has picked up.
Okay.
And ironically enough, the platform that's really flying is the online used vehicle sector.
I was going to ask you about that. Because I've been looking at as one does, constantly, if you like cars, and then you're looking for the deals, the bargains, and I believe you can find some if you are very astute. But there's also lots and lots of caveats dealing with online buying. What are they?
The risk factor is huge buying online, Dave. Obviously, you don't know what you're getting. There's a lot of companies now sitting with massive amount of stock because of these quick buy. Actually, buy your car online. You can actually put your car online, go into these platforms, put in your details, and offer you a firm price, and actually pay you and come collect the vehicle.
You mean to sell your car?
To sell your car.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me. Then what they do is they take that into stock, and then, of course, they offer it on the online platforms. Now, there's where the problem lies. You are buying vehicles that have just come in and gone out. There's been no system in which they've gone through to be brought up to the right standard. These guys are sitting with warehouses literally full of hundreds of thousands of vehicles.
Now, a lot of them do offer a kind of protection to the consumer in the sense that they've been checked out by an organization, like, for example, DECRA. They have a DECRA report. How good are those? They don't seem to be terribly thorough.
No, they're not. Obviously, they look at, and unfortunately, you can only, I mean, you know, on the pit, as we call it, the still old-fashioned hole in the ground, or on the lift, whatever the case is. And you basically can only look at what you can see. There are so many underlying problems that can exist in a motor car that just won't get picked up.
Really, even with the diagnostics, they plug it in and they say this came up, that came up, nothing.
You can clear that before you take the vehicle in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's, unfortunately, it's not very easy to pick up a lot of the problems. A lot of them are getting around it by saying, look, there is systems in place so that if you do buy the vehicle with problems, they'll sort it out. That's a big economical drive, again, to when you buy the car, you're purchasing it with a aftermarket warranty. Mm. They just build it into the price. Okay. So they're farming off their issue. So if you do claim on it, they just go, well, there's an aftermarket warranty in place. You go and get the car repaired at your preferred repairer. Your aftermarket warranty obviously will then
kick in. That seems to be a reasonable
It does. It does. The only problem is the aftermarket warranties don't really cover the full extent of the monetary value of the repair. So you normally do sit with a bit of a shortfall. But yes, it's a system put in place to cover themselves and to cover you, certainly, if you buy the vehicle from them with issues.
So, you know, proceed, but proceed under advisement.
Yeah, exactly.
Always a good idea if you can take along a friend who knows a bit about motors and, you know, go for a spin and take a good listen and a look and a feel, and you get a handle. I mean, you could pretty much, with your experience, take a car for a drive and pick up issues.
Yeah, that's just obviously years of experience and knowledge, but unfortunately that is the risk of an online platform. Yeah. You know, buying it from a dealer or a physical sort of place where you have recall to go back to, or the vehicle has come from and gone through a system, it's just safer. But that's the risk you carry. They're cheaper online, and unfortunately that's the way the world's going right now. Yeah. The guys are just
like
picking
everything
them offline. So look, I'm not necessarily saying that they're all problematic. And yes, aftermarket warranties do help and they do cover you. So, you know, it depends on the person you are. If it's a risk you want to take and you want to do with it and you're quite happy to move on. And let me be honest, like I say, you're probably only 20% or so of the people actually do get burnt. The rest are quite happy with their purchase.
Yeah.
All about numbers.
Ultimately. And then, of course, you know, if you do pick up and if you do are tempted by the fact that you're not paying the wickedly expensive price of a new car, even a relatively late model, low mileage, it's still expensive. But you want the luxury of a couple of years down the line, a still top end motor car, if it's been maintained, is a pleasure to drive. But then, of course, to maintain it from there, that's when looking for a good partner, if you like, in the maintenance of your vehicle, the servicing and repair, and that's where an organization like yours comes in, which apparently now legally is allowed to service even vehicles under warranty. Is that right?
100%. The new Right to Service Act, which the government brought out, allows establishments like us, who are obviously affiliated with all the right organizations, that being the RMR, MIWA, etc., and they're quite tightly scrutinized in terms of audits and how we operate. We can still maintain and service vehicles that are still under the dealership's factory warranties.
Now, I was talking to a dealer principal the other day from a very well-known market. He said, look, you've got to be careful with these service centers that are privateers and independents and that offer quick, cheap services, because how do you know that they've done anything to your car? Because, you know, they make it smell nice, they've tightened up the handbrake.
Dave, I agree with you 100%. I've been in the trade my whole life, and let me tell you, it's not a pretty place to be. It is probably one of the easiest industries to rip a customer off in. And unfortunately, that is the reality. There are no more government existing
authorities
in place like there used to be in the old days. Anyone can open a workshop without any form of certification or any sort of regulation. And unfortunately, that's the reality of South Africa at the moment. So, yeah, you've got to just be cautious about, obviously, where you take it to. That is, on the cheap service side, that is a marketing strategy that came a while ago from a chain of workshop-branded workshops. And it was purely put in place to get you in the door. So they would say to you, look, service your car from 495 Rand or whatever the case was. And literally that is just to get you in the door. And I know personally that each and every vehicle, for instance, on the 495 service has got a budget of 2,500 Rand for every car that comes in. So when it comes in, it's not 495.
Oh, so they say, we picked up this and we picked up that. Do you want us to fix it or do you want us to leave it?
Yeah.
Your choice is yours. Who's going to say leave it?
Well,
it's
exactly.
Got to be done.
It's all smoke and mirrors and it's marketing. It's to get you in the door. Once you're in the door, obviously, then they throw the book at you and more. And again, that's where unscrupulous sort of behavior from these guys comes in. You know, rather deal with the guys that are transparent from the start, 100% transparent about the repair, the service, or whatever the situation is with your car. You know what you're in for, you know what you're getting, and you know, that's my best advice.
And there we leave it for today, but we'll pick up the conversation in a week's time. This is going to be a regular feature. Yeah. Every Tuesday around about this time, Anton van Olleman in the house for Bolito Car Service Center. And I believe there's some good news that we're going to be talking about, hopefully, with regard to Bolito Car Service Center and the brand going forward. But that'll be for next week. And until we meet again in thunder, lightning, or in rain, nice to have you back on the show.
Awesome, Dave. Loving it. Thanks. We've been